Welcome back to the Big Move Podcast. I'm your host, Em. I'm a content creator, podcast producer, and a mother. And as I thought about a new season of the podcast, I went back to my roots and what made me start this show to begin with. At its core, it's this idea of connection, relatability, and motivating each other through the impactful conversations we're having as women. I'll be talking to the same powerhouse caliber of female guests that I know are going to light you up, but we're getting real on how they've redefined themselves in entirely new seasons and phases of life. We're honing in on what fuels us, what brings us back to ourselves, and ultimately, what keeps us moving. So with that, let's get into new episodes. Shamini, hi, and welcome to the show.
Hi, Em. Thanks so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be on.
Pleasure to have you. We have so much to cover. We're really excited to chat with you today. For those that might not already follow Rationale or know you, could you give us a quick intro and backdrop on who you are and what you're all about?
Yeah, of course. So my name is Shamini, as you know. I am the Chief Executive Officer of Rationale Skincare, and Rationale is an Australian luxury cosmeceutical. We've been around for over 30 years, and we have just sort of launched into America a couple of years ago and are slowly trying to infiltrate the American market. And yeah, I am a mother as well, and I work full time. So a very similar story to many, many people out there.
So we have so much to dive in with you today. I love to set the tone with conversations with my guests with the question of what's your big move? Has there been a pivotal turning point in your life or something that stands out in your mind that has really shaped your story?
I don't know if there's one very pivotal point. I think it's more so really a convergence of a couple of defining forces in my life or moments in my life, I should say. So, you know, I've always had this love for commerce and for beauty that sort of coupled together as my very early ambitions coming and stepping into the role and the different roles at Rationale that I've had, learning to adapt and evolve through that journey. So I know we'll go into a little bit more deeper conversation around it, but I think it was the unknown. I didn't expect to step into the role at Rationale. How I got into it was quite different. And I think that just really changed the course of what I thought I was going to be doing and what I am doing right now.
Yes. And that is something that I kind of wanted to kick off the conversation was your role at Rationale and your sort of evolving career trajectory. So to back up, you have had a bit of an unorthodox career trajectory. So you went from marketing coordinator to CEO is my understanding in a very short time period, in 4 years. I'd love for you to kind of set the stage a little bit around this and how that sort of evolved with you from your earlier days to where you're sitting now as CEO.
Yeah. So I started in the business almost 14 years ago, and Rationale was quite a small team and a small business. And the business model looked very different when I joined. And so my background is in marketing and in brand. And I was brought on really, as you had mentioned, to lead more from a marketing and a digital perspective as well. So I started in this coordinator role. And as the business grows and as a smaller business, you tend to put your hand up to do slightly different things. I have a lot of curiosity in how I work or what I'm doing. And so whenever an opportunity arose or it was a different project, I sort of put my hand up and to go, well, maybe I can do that. Maybe I can support. And I think it really came from a genuine nature of you want to help your team. You really believed in the vision. I really believed and still believe in the vision of our founder, Richard Parker. And you really want to make your team's dreams come true. And so through that, I moved into more of a digital marketing role. And then I moved into an operational role. Again, they were all sort of pivotal times where something big was happening in the business, or we were changing course, or we were changing our business strategy. And we needed somebody to either put their hand up to figure something out or to lead us through something. And every time, Richard was obviously a huge part of championing and sort of saying, great, if you can do it, go forward, do it. And so it finally got me to a position where I am today. But it also meant that I was almost learning from the ground. It was, you know, starting in what I knew, but I would learn about the operational part, what we needed from warehousing and logistics, because I physically did it for a little bit, all while doing my original job as well. I had a little bit of a background setting up retail and bricks and mortar stores, and he really had a vision to do that. And he said, well, you know, you can do it because you've got a semblance of what this is. I'm like, I kind of did it, but I was like, I ran a shop. Like, I didn't sort of build the head of retail model or anything. But, you know, you've got the right attitude, you've got the right team, you've got a leader that believes in you. You feel a sense of, I don't want to let anybody down and I'm going to try. So again, I would build sort of the basic models of certain things within in the business, and then sort of prove to Richard, hey, we need somebody who's so much better at doing this than I am. And it came to a point where they were looking for a senior leader in the business from a general manager role, which I then stepped into, which was very exciting for me, and eventually into the role that I hold now. I guess different forces again came together to help me get to that point. They were looking for a CEO. I'd help them sort of pitch in a number of different profiles. Nobody ever seemed really right for the business. And at one sort of time that we were all away as a business team, Richard sort of just said, we want you to do it. And in a very similar way of, I think many women do this, I kind of went, oh, no, I'm not the right person. Let me find you somebody else. I can't do this. And he absolutely, to his credit, had said, no, we want you. You've done everything in this business. You understand and you care for this business so much. And so they really helped me, I guess, find my feet and believed in me. And through that, a lot of other things also sort of just worked out for me to be in this role for a number of years.
I love that. And something that you're saying is resonating so much that I know is a buzzy word, but it's buzzy for a reason, is this idea of imposter syndrome, which it sounds like you went through a little bit of that. Obviously, it helps to have a leader like Richard really empowering you. He's there championing you. That's so amazing. But what else were you sort of fighting in your mind, or how did you combat that imposter syndrome?
Yeah, I think I had quite a simplistic view of it, in terms of I could take everybody else's feedback on board. But what I did know is that I knew this business really well. I knew the skincare industry really well. I knew our competitor landscape really well. I wasn't expected to understand how to build a car or sell machinery that required some other sort of knowledge that I did not know. I backed myself in terms of knowing I know this brand and I connect to it, and nobody else has the guards or the stewardship as much as I do. So it's okay. And it's okay to fail, and it's okay to learn, and it's okay to ask questions. I've always sort of been that person who, if I don't know something till, you know, as early as yesterday, I was like, what is that? So I'm not afraid of asking for help or getting the right people around me. And that really helps. As soon as you realize, hey, hang on a minute, I know as much as I need to know about this. I don't need to know as much about this other stuff. So it's okay. And people come into roles with such lauded resumes and CVs of, I've done this and I've gone to do this and I've built all of these things. And that's amazing. And that experience is invaluable as well. But there's also value in not knowing and learning and having a fresh perspective, which I think, you know, COVID was a really good example of how that gave everybody a perspective of, we don't know what to do. We don't have a playbook. Let's sort of move forward. And I guess having that sort of approach has really guided me and guided the business in a really strong way.
Yeah, I love that. And I feel like the passion was there for you. So you had that passion, and then coupled with that grit and that hustle. So you mentioned making mistakes, failures, which I love that you mentioned that, because we're all going to make mistakes in business, right? And in life and motherhood. So is there the hardest lesson learned, or a theme in your career, or something that you would want to offer listeners that you think could be helpful?
I honestly do think that the hardest lesson is, you know, everybody will fail and everybody will fall, but it is, how do you pick yourself up? How do you get over it? How do you not have this negative chatter in your head that's coupled with the imposter syndrome part? You know, of, I didn't do this. I knew I couldn't do it. Like, I shouldn't be doing this. It's kind of, that's the trajectory usually we have in our minds, or the narratives that we play. And so I guess that's the main thing. as you said, it's not just limited to work and career, it's motherhood as well. It's friendships. Like, you will fail at some point, and not because you mean to do so, but circumstances sometimes come in. So I think I've just learned that everyone is going to fail. Everybody's going to fall. What degree that happens? Do you have enough agency and resilience in yourself to get up and go, that's okay, I can dust myself off and I can move forward? And usually when you build a really strong team and you have people that, you know, champion you and advocate you within the business or, you know, in your family, you can get up and you can move forward. And so I think it's important to go, failure is not loneliness, because everybody's going through it.
Yeah. Again, another huge theme in motherhood, which I know we will get to, but I guess that's sort of like an ending off career question for you, as you have had success within your own company, obviously going from your early days to now sitting in your seat in this leadership role. Any advice to women who are maybe looking to advance their career in their current role at their current company? What would you say to them?
I would say, don't work out everything in your head. I think as women, we tend to overplan and we have different contingency plans. And in our heads, we've worked out if that person leaves that role, they've already got somebody else in the wings, you know. And I think the main thing is to put yourself forward, to back yourself, and to also go, I don't need to know 100% of this role or 100% of this department to put my hand up to go, hey, I could be a really good candidate, or I want to do this. I think as leaders, or myself in particular, I really value initiative. I really value somebody putting their hand up going, I can do this. I can show I can do this while doing my current job. And, you know, meritocracy has a lot of weight in if you've worked really hard and you've shown to be a really good contributor and you can give meaningful impact, not just to the work itself, but to the culture of the business. Back yourself, lean in, put your hand up, say, can I try this? Don't be afraid of failure. If somebody says it the first time, hey, you're not quite ready yet, you have these gaps, understand what they are and go again. So don't take no, I guess, as the first starting point, but continue backing yourself.
I think that's a great theme, just to say, lean in and just try it out. You never know what that journey is going to kind of look like, or that next step, or what it could lead you to next.
Totally. Absolutely.
So switching gears a little bit, what I'd love to do is giving our audience members just an understanding of the backdrop of who Rational is. I know that you guys have a cult following in Australia. You are a household name, but if you could give us just like a little synopsis on the background and the backdrop of Rational and where it's at.
Yeah, of course. As I mentioned, Rational is a luxury cosmeceutical. We've been around for over 30 years. So Richard Parker is our founder and our director of research. The brand started very much as a B2B proposition where effectively, we had created this line of skincare that we focused on what optimal healthy skin needed to thrive. And it was really three, I guess, collections in the day to protect and three collections in the night that repair, and all based on science-backed, high-performance, efficacious formulations as well. And, you know, I think that's been a really enduring message of ours that, you know, we had dermatologists and plastic surgeons at the outset selling the product for us. We didn't go direct to consumer at the very start. And it was that level of advocacy and endorsement, you know, unpaid, obviously, that really started and strengthened the brand, like that a specialist was telling you, hey, use this product. And, you know, again, this is going back 30 years where the landscape was so different. There wasn't rife with information or accessibility to this. And again, because it was very much in that illness, wellness space of, you know, people would go to a dermatologist typically when they had a skin problem or a skin concern that was quite intense. And so Rational's solution was very much, what can we do to give you luminous skin for life? And for us, healthy skin is really radiant, luminous skin. That's the marker of really healthy skin. So we've always played in the space of like healthy, luminous, optimal skin health. Mm-hmm. And from there, that's obviously grown into, we now obviously go direct to consumers. In Australia, we've set up our own flagship of a network of flagships that we have. So we do provide treatments and facial services, all non-invasive, you know, but you go in and you feel like you've had this high performance facial, but you can walk out of there with no downtime as well. So that sort of completed the loop for us of this omni-channel offering. All of our research is done on site. So we have our own lab. So we do that. We now manufacture our own selves. So 3 years ago, we undertook this huge undertaking really of setting up our own production and manufacturing facility as well. And as of in a couple of months, we're going to be FDA certified as well. So we can take care of that whole process. So we've vertically integrated the whole business. And I think not many people know that about us, that we develop the products, we make the products, we distribute the products, and we take care of that client experience through the whole process.
Yeah, absolutely. And that is one of the things that I feel like I took away from the brand activation and dinner that you guys did this past fall at the beautiful Mayflower property in Connecticut. That's where I was introduced to the brand. And I actually had a chance to meet pretty much your whole team was there. Yeah, and hearing from the mouths of Richard Parker himself was so inspiring because he is this chemist and his background's incredible. And truly, I think everyone can agree who was at that dinner that night, we were hanging on to every word that he was saying because he was teaching us and educating us in that moment, not only about rationale, but around skincare, longevity, and sun care. It was just so impressive to hear everything that he was saying and to see that you guys have that 360 degree approach and you're testing all of your products in-house. I'm curious, and for listeners, for you to share in sort of layman's terms, is what is some of those skincare longevity themes? Why is that important to the brand?
Yeah, I think connecting to Richard's story is a huge part of this. Like, he created this brand because of his own struggles as a teenager. You know, he was a competitive swimmer, he had acne, he had a lot of sun damage. Living where he lived in Australia, it's, you know, where this displaced population living, you know, with a huge ozone layer hole. And so we've got the harshest sun that we deal with. And I think at some stage, and I think we're not number one anymore, but we had the highest rates of skin cancers in the world or skin melanomas in the world. So we take from very young sun protection really seriously as well. So from that perspective, we do find that being able to educate and being able to understand that 80% of all skin aging really comes from the sun, that's one of the first things that we want to focus on. And we can repair a lot of the damage, but we also need to protect and prevent from the sun. And this is essentially what the Essential Six and our protect and repair message is based on. I think the other part, I guess, in layman's terms is really, you know, we focus a lot on epigenetics and epigenetics really, I guess in layman's terms, sort of dictates that, you know, you're born with the genes that you have, but you can really control that end right now. So it doesn't mean that your parents were predisposed with sun damage or, you know, prone to skin cancers. If your skin was really fair on that Fitzpatrick scale, that you can't, you know, your destiny is inevitable. It's very much, well, you can now protect your skin, you can do the right things, and you can avoid that final circumstance is really how I would look at it. It doesn't mean that this happened to your parents. From a skin perspective, it's going to happen to you.
Yeah, of course. And so obviously we can do our best with SPF and sun care, but are there any other skin tips outside of obviously SPF, but what about reversing some of the damage that we've already done? What is like one to two things that you think that listeners should be doing in that realm?
Yeah, as we sort of mentioned, SPF is probably a really big part of it and to continue protecting as well. It's not so much reversing, but how do you get back to that optimal, healthy skin? Richard always talks about it's like nutrition or fitness. Like, you can't just be running and you can't just be doing weights and you can't just stretch. You've got to do a little bit of everything and you've got to eat right as well. So that's essentially the philosophy for us in terms of how do you take care of aging in a way that's really appropriate to you. And again, we're talking about healthy skin. And for us, that's, you know, you've got to have a few B group vitamins there. You got to have, you know, antioxidant protection and, you know, whether that's how the formulation is put together, whether it's a bit of vitamin C and a little bit of vitamin A, your retinol is really important, but the kind of retinol that you have is important that you can use it day after day and not have any reverse effects. Your alpha hydroxy acids to refine your skin and recalibrate your skin is really important. And then, you know, you do want a boost of ceramides and lipids to really fortify your barrier and to make sure your barrier is really strong. And so I guess the one skin tip I really learned is that people dismiss cleansing as a big part of what they do, or they kind of are so focused on the efficacious high performance sort of your retinols and your vitamin A's and things. But the cleansing step is really important. And a lot of the time, besides SPF, I always say to a client or a friend, get your cleansing right, because so much can actually shift if you've got the right cleanser that you're using. I feel like I'm going into a sales pitch at the moment, but I feel very passionately about the cleanser.
I actually love that you mentioned the cleanser, because I feel like it's a little bit of a curveball. And when we're talking about sun care and all of these other environmental influences, I feel like, yeah, it's not something I necessarily would think about. I tend to agree with you. I think cleansing can get maybe lost in the mix, but I think it's an important call out.
It's like your foundation, right? We're sort of looking at all of these other things, but you got to learn to crawl before you can walk. And the cleansing step for me, and what I have been taught by Richard, is that you need to imbue your skin with all of these ceramides and lipids. It's important for your skin to have that for, you know, nourishment, hydration, but barrier fortification. And that's the first step before you then start introducing things that your skin requires you to be more resilient to tolerate and to do the right things with. And, you know, we talk about cleansing once, not twice a day. It's very much an evening step to remove a lot of the environmental things or your sunscreen or your makeup. But if you're using the right kind of cleanser, then all of that goodness is still on your skin. If you wake up the next morning, it's more a splash of water, and then you start your day routine. Obviously, depending on your lifestyle, if you're going out in the sun or, you know, you're exercising, of course, you're going to be washing your face. But you want to leave good things on your skin, because your skin does need a level of the ceramides and the lipids to function at a healthy and optimal point.
Yeah. And I think my one other call out too, while we're on this subject, is your hero product, which is the tinted serum. And you guys won the Oprah Sun Awards for best serum and sunscreen. How did that come about?
That was so surprising to us, because this tinted serum SPF 50 plus was always a very, very important step in our system. And I think the fact the formulation is so innovative in terms of, it's a mineral only, it's a zinc only sunscreen, but it is very, very light. It spreads beautifully on the skin. It works for me as well as it works for you. You know, our skin types or our skin tones are quite different as well. It didn't really give any white cast. So I think it was just the usability of this product was so elegant, and it then had all of these other benefits that it just caught the eye of everybody who was using it. And it's now become our hero product, and it's one of our most beloved products because it is so multifunctional. It does all the things a sunscreen and sun protection needs to do, but it also allows you to use it without feeling that begrudging step of, oh gosh, this doesn't feel so good, but I need to be using it. And it also imparts this beautiful, quite luminous finish on your skin. So even if you just have that and you're going for a walk, you've got the protection, but you've also got a really lovely canvas to start with.
I love that. And so thinking about your US expansion, where are you feeling like you guys ultimately are wanting Rationale to kind of sit in terms of positioning in the market?
Yeah, I think that's such a great question, because, you know, what we are here in Australia looks very different, because again, the heritage of the brand is we've been here for such a long time. So, you know, our intention is to make sure that that message of an enduring brand really, really cuts through. America is an extremely huge country. There are so many exciting things happening. There are so many businesses and founders that are launching skincare brands, you know, every couple of minutes as well. So I do want us to be known for this really steady, focused brand that has one mission, and that is to impart beautiful, healthy skin and make you as a consumer feel really confident at any stage of their life as well. You know, I've been with the business for 14 years, and Rationale has sort of seen me through those different phases that we all go through, from, you know, getting engaged to a wedding to babies to now, you know, perimenopause and whatever those life stages are. But I do want us to really be positioned as, you know, our heritage, which is we are science-backed, we are research-led, high-performance, efficacious cosmeceutical, but that really imparts this prestigious and luxurious feel as well.
Amazing. I'm so excited for listeners to actually experience and try the brand out. So I think we have an offer coming out that people can use, and it's going to be in our show notes. So needless to say, such a fan of all your products so far, and I'm excited for people to try it. Switching gears a little bit. Yes. So I want to get into identity and motherhood and sort of navigating your workload at Rationale with, you have three kids at home. They're 7, 5, and 2.
Yes.
Now that you have kids, you have this full family, how have your expectations shifted or changed when you think about your career aspirations, or how have you sort of found, I don't like to use the word balance, but what does that kind of look like for you?
Yeah, similar to you, I struggle with the word balance because it literally means two opposite things. But I do think it maybe gives me a little bit more purpose in terms of why I'm doing what I'm doing. And, you know, you start with these big ambitions and career ambitions because you're young and you have all of this energy to give and you want to learn. And so I think my expectations have really shifted. I want to role model certain things with them or to them. I want them to know that you can be really fulfilled. And I know that I'm doing this for a purpose. Like, I'm doing this to give them better opportunities and give them a better life. And I think that's where my expectations have really shifted. It's given me more meaning or more purpose.
Yeah, I've had my podcast relaunched in the last 6 months. And with just 5 episodes back and honing in a little bit more on motherhood, I think most of the guests have said that it's actually just sharpened their why. I think that we are more productive as moms and we're mm-hmm. able to just kind of sharpen that why and hone in even more than ever. What would you say maybe to the mom who's maybe worried about taking a step back in their career? They're in the throes of early motherhood, because I think it can also feel frustrating to try to wrap our heads around taking a step back, even if it mm-hmm. is for a short time period. What would you say to her?
Especially if you're a first-time mom and, you know, we've had this experience that you don't know what you don't know. You're not going to be sure about how you're going to feel. And I've seen so many iterations of parents or people who've become parents in our business that it's changed them in ways that they never expected. And I think as women, when we're working so hard at our career, in our lives, we just go, you know, having a family or having the first baby, it's okay. I'm just going to pick up where I've left off. And you don't really know how you're going to feel until you're holding this little thing in your arms as well. And you know, again, as we said, you said that so eloquently, your why really gets sharpened. And so the advice I would give is don't back yourself into a corner of I'm going to return or I have to return at a specific time. It looks different for everybody and that's okay. And for some people, it is, you know, returning really quickly. And for other people, it's like, I'm okay. I'm going to take the time. And what I can say from experience as well is that I really value parents in a business because we suddenly understand we have to be really sharp. We can't waste time. Every moment means something and we want to contribute really meaningful work. And I think that's what I've seen any mother who's returned to our business, especially as a first-time mom, they love the work that they do. It gives them meaning outside of, you know, raising a really beautiful and thriving family. And they're just good at their jobs. They really, really are so good at their jobs because they're juggling so much. They understand how to prioritize. So don't downgrade the fact that being a mother and staying at home and doing all of the things that you do, you learn resilience, patience, you're thrown every single thing at motherhood because we don't know. We're not trained for this job of being mm-hmm. mums or dads. And, you know, giving us a baby to take home from the hospital, you know, after a couple of days, like that is the most unprepared anybody can be for a job. Again, it's backing yourself with following your gut instinct of I need a bit more time or I want to get back, make it work for your family dynamic as well. You are very valued. Just remember that you are very valued as a mother coming back into the workforce.
Yeah. I love that you said that, you know, there's just these transferable skills that you learn in motherhood that you can then take back into work. So you mentioned moms coming back into Rationale after having maybe their first child. Mm-hmm. What would you say to her? Are there any tips you would offer someone who is going back into corporate life?
This is probably not the answer, but be kind to yourself. Again, you're rebuilding what your life was previously in terms of, you know, before that you have a really good routine and you're exercising and you're doing this and you're seeing your friends and you've got time for your partner. And that sort of gets all turned quite topsy-turvy. And the only way I've, from experience, gotten through it is to be really kind to myself of I don't need to be doing everything straight away that I used to be doing. You know, as much as I need to be exercising for my mental health, I can't fit in what I used to do, whether it's an hour and a half or going to a class. It's so unpredictable. So it's okay if I'm kind to myself and go, you know what, if I get out for a 20-minute walk, I've done that. I've moved my body and I will get to that point where I'm doing what I used to be doing and I feel really good about it. So I think that's the one sort of piece of advice is be really kind to yourself and don't be a martyr. If you need help, if you need to get a lactation consultant, or you need to get a sleep consultant, if you need just your friends to come over and sit down to give you a semblance of who you are, call them, get them to come. Like, just don't feel like you have to do everything by yourself. It's a community. We're made to raise families and people together. Mm-hmm. So probably those two things.
I love that. Don't be a martyr. Raise your hand. Ask for what you need. Grab your partner and ask for what you need. Yes. I just don't think that we do it enough. I'm right there with you. What works well for you? Are there boundaries in place? Give us the lay of the land for how you're sort of juggling your role at Rational and the family structure at home, the systems at home. What is working well for your family unit?
I think I've really shifted the way I work as well. So I'm quite prescribed in terms of how I set up my days. From a work perspective, I'm very clear of how I delegate, and I trust the people that I've delegated to do the work. Previous to that, I probably would get into the weeds a lot more and probably be just really meddlesome, to be honest. So I now know that if that's not my responsibility, I've delegated that to somebody, don't try and go back to it. So my day is quite structured in when I start work, and I have a very clear sort of cutoff time of when I'll take my last meeting. And it just gives me a little bit of time to kind of relook at the day, what has happened, what meetings I need to set, and do that little bit before I sort of get home. I have a commute to get home. So in that time, I do sort of a couple of calls, but when I'm at home, I'm with the kids as well. And very similarly to you, our kids are quite young, so they need us a little bit more. And, you know, the day is very much, it's crazy, right? I leave in the morning and I'm like, oh my gosh, the day has been a long day and it's not even 8 o'clock. And so I feel a sense of calm at work in this weird way. And then I go back to, you know, the craziness of family. But we do have a care support system that is really, really strong. We obviously have nannies that help us, and my husband's parents live very near us. We actually moved to be really near them to make it really easy for them to help us. And my husband has his own business as well. So we've got two jobs that are quite intense, but he has a level of flexibility. We communicate quite well of who needs to be where. And instead of balance, I really look at it as prioritizing at different times of the week or the month. We're prioritizing different things. So, you know, in this period of time, I'm probably prioritizing a little bit more work, a little bit more functions. And so he's really aware that he's got to be at home a lot more. And then in other instances, when he's got to travel, he's got big things that he's doing, I know that I'm saying no to events or saying no to certain things outside of my usual obligations. It's really a compromise. It's really planning. I think I try and plan as much as possible, and just also expect something is going to be thrown in there. The spanner is going to be thrown, but we manage, and something will give, whether it's the house not being as clean as I want it to be, or food, you know, they're having breakfast for dinner, you know, eggs are nutritious for dinner too. So we just make it work.
Totally. And I think that's where my head goes to pivoting, right? It's like, you're going to get those curveballs thrown in your day with work, with family life. And it's how you pivot, and you're malleable, and you're flipping over to the next thing.
You're just like, it's okay. It's not going to be the thing that gets me today. Yeah. So you just move forward.
So we talk a lot about mom guilt on this podcast. I feel like it shows up for women in all sorts of different ways, shapes, and form. Does mom guilt show up for you? And I guess I'm curious how you navigate that.
I think I've got a fairly healthy relationship with it, because I know what I'm doing and I know that the kids are really happy. And I go by that as my barometer of, is this the right thing for us to do? But interestingly, I think when I had my third child, I was speaking to my obstetrician, who I loved, and it was, you know, that 6-week checkup. And I said, I think I have mum guilt. Like, how do I work through this? And I would have another child just to be able to see my obstetrician again. But she was this incredible woman who obviously was an obstetrician gynecologist. She did her law degree. She had 4 kids, and, you know, she was taking on this other thing that she was doing. And she actually said to me something quite profound that I deeply connected with. She said, having mum guilt means you care. You care enough about the children, yourself, your family unit. She said the opposite of that is indifference, and you're not indifferent to the whole thing. So having a bit of guilt is actually a good thing. It makes you want to be better. It makes you want to, you're a lot more aware, and bringing awareness to something is really important. And I think that little bit of a reframe really helped me. It helped me feel a little bit more settled with, you know, why am I feeling this way? And if I'm feeling this way, I'm just a little bit off balance or off kilter with what I want to be prioritizing, you know, within my week, my month, my year as well. I'm also really good at communicating with my kids to the best of my ability of what a 7 and a 5-year-old can really understand in a 2-year-old. I can't be at pickups and I can't be at drop-offs, but I'm so aware of what's going on in their lives or their friends, you know, the friends that they're making. And, you know, this person's my friend today because they love Spider-Man, and this person's not my friend today because they don't love Taylor Swift. I guess I ally a lot of that guilt by going, I know the kids and I know that they're really happy and I know what makes them happy, as opposed to feeling like I need to tick all of the boxes. And, you know, the number of times I've been mistaken for the nanny at drop-off, like my daughter's cute little friend Penny was like, hi, are you the new nanny? Because it was the first time she'd seen me in a really long time. And I was like, I'm going to take that as thank you. I look young and rationale is really working. And sort of just saying, no, I'm actually Asha's mom, but I, you know, I work. And so I'm not able to do the drop-offs very often. Today is really special and really lucky for me to do it. And I'm okay with that. I know that there's so many other women and so many other parents who feel exactly the same thing. So it's not it's a normal reaction to have, but it's understanding what thought process you have to ally that and not make it this really bad narrative in your head. And I feel comfortable with it. As long as I feel comfortable, it's okay.
I love that reframe that you shared. And I also love the communication piece, you know, depending on the ages of your kids, yeah. But at whatever time is appropriate, just to try to share and tell them why. I think is such a simple, small thing that we can do. And the last piece that I feel like you ended off with is like, we don't have to feel so negative about having the mom guilt. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah. I think it's experiencing that and sitting with that, and that it's okay that we're feeling this way is also just a simple reframe.
Yeah. And a little bit of guilt means, or mom guilt means, you care. You care enough that you're thinking about your child, and it's almost the opposite of it, right? Like you care so much about them that you're thinking of it. So a reframe in my mind is always healthy.
Yeah, absolutely. So at the end of the day, with so much on your plate, what are the things that you reach for that sort of bring you back to you at your essence? Like, what do you reach for?
Do you know what? I used to have so much routine and ritual around what I was doing. And again, you know, the benefit of time is a beautiful thing that it's lost on people who are young and have that beautiful flexibility. But I think actually doing my skincare in the night is probably one really calming thing that I go, oh, I do this for me, and I do this and I feel good and it's easy. Again, I tend to not overprescribe all of the things I have to do. Like I speak to so many incredible and interesting people, and when I learn about what they do for themselves, whether it's like they wake up at this time in the morning and they do this and they do all of the different things, I aspire to do that. But then I also get to a point where I'm like, oh my gosh, I am now in this paralysis of all the things I have to do. So I keep it quite simple. For me, it is about getting sleep, and I try and go to bed fairly early as well. If I feel really rested, I can take on any kind of thing that is thrown at me or a pivot in the day. And I really love to read, so I read in the night. And I usually read like a nonfiction book because it's interesting and you're learning. But what I really committed to myself is I'm just reading fiction. I just want to read things that make me, you know, love reading, essentially. And that really calms me, puts me to bed quite easily. And it's actually quite interesting. I found that my 7-year-old is going, oh, mom's always reading. I'm just going to read with her. So it's a little bit of that makes me feel quite good. But that's probably one of the key things I do every day for myself. It's I do my nighttime ritual. I read and I'm in bed quite early. And then the other parts more throughout the week and throughout the month, I do find, you know, making time for my friends and seeing them is really important for me to just catch up and to get sort of the other person outside of who I am at work, I think is really important. But I have a good cadence of when I see my friends and how I see my friends. So probably that.
And I'm curious, from like a mindset and a mental health standpoint, as someone sitting in what I imagine to be a high pressure role as CEO at the company, what are you doing to kind of stay on top of your mental load?
Yeah. I think I have quite a healthy boundary around things will always happen, right? And things will always happen always at the worst time, or things will, what I've learned and my experiences has taught me that inevitably you're never going to have a smooth road. But what I do know is that some of those problems will be there the next day as well. So I tend to not panic. I tend to sort of, if a problem comes or something out of the blue happens, it's around going, all right, this is the information I require. I'm going to take 24 hours. So I'm not reacting in a way. I've got a bit of time to sit on it. And I think that's probably a really good thing. And, you know, you know it as well. As soon as you've got little kids running around, as much as you're still thinking about it, you can't really think about it as much. And so I have a natural gear to switch off because the kids are running around and they're asking you questions and you've got to answer and you've got to give them a solution to something. And then I, you know, before I go to bed at night, I usually just write a couple of things down in terms of what I need to sort of think of. So I know I've downloaded everything. So the next day I can sort of look at that list and prioritize and make the calls I need to make or call the meetings I need to have. So from that perspective, I think that really helps with my mental health to be able to go, I can't do anything about this now, and fretting over it and thinking about it and calling people is not going to change that situation in the next 8 hours. So how can I be really productive? I've got to be the most calm, and how I show up when a situation is heightening is really important, because I do know that the team will take on exactly how I'm feeling. So if I'm feeling really anxious, if I'm feeling really angry or frustrated, it's not going to be a powerful or a positive impact on how we solve something. So mm-hmm. I know I've always got to be quite calm, and the only way for me to be quite calm is to be quite clear around, it's not going to get solved today. It probably won't get solved tomorrow, but this is the step that I'm taking to get a solution.
Yeah. I actually love that. It's resonating with me so much, especially as we look ahead to a new year and almost having a clean slate. Yeah. It sounds like you're comfortable, and I feel like I need to be better with the spillover into the next day, slowing down and being intentional. And you just made it sound so simple and eloquent. So I'm like, I think that we all need to keep this theme going.
Yeah, Richard used to have this thing around no bad news in a Friday. So to a certain extent, I take that on. And that's for me not telling them anything. Like, I obviously hold this stuff. But, you know, it's true. Like, you can't really do anything on a Friday up to a Monday for the most part, of course. So it's the same thing. Like, you can't really do much with it tonight. Tomorrow's the problem's still going to be there. You're fresh. You've got a bit more better perspective. You know, tackle it the next day.
Yeah, I love that. So as a last question, what is it that lights a fire in you? What is it that keeps you moving?
That's a great question. You know, when you're moving so quickly, you don't really have time to sort of stop. This is funny, but I love problems, and I love when, you know, we're talking about things happening and if things are not always happening in the right way. I love being able to understand a problem. I love being able to come together with people to find a solution. And so I think that intellectual curiosity, if I'm not learning and I'm not able to meet interesting people and learn different things of how they live their life or what they're doing in their businesses or what's important to them and how they're raising their families, I think that is probably the thing that will stop me. So I think movement for me and what keeps me really excited is learning. And at Rationale, very particularly, I learn every single day. There are so many aspects. We're going obviously global. There are different things that you learn about a country and how they shop and what's important to them. I can consistently learn from our research lab. I consistently learn about the evolving landscape of online and what's important, what's changing. So I think learning is probably the thing that keeps me moving.
Yeah, I love it. So what's next for you? What's next for Rationale? Are there any product launches or anything big you want to call out coming up in 2026? Anything?
Yeah, for Rationale, it's really around the focus and discipline that we want to apply to the American market. And so that for me is going to be the consistent theme for the next year. From an overall perspective, it is about making the brand bigger, getting it to resonate with more people, really staying in our lane of who our client is. It is that millennial client. It is that client that's going through these different life stages, and how Rationale can really fit in really seamlessly into that. For myself personally, it's very much a continue to survive until I'm feeling like I'm thriving. So yeah, just putting one foot in front of the other, again, not being too hard on myself, spending good quality time with friends and family, and, you know, watching little people grow and say funny things is always quite joyous. And from a rational perspective, I'm so excited with, you know, we're having a couple of new launches. Keep your eye out for all the very exciting things that are happening with the 3 tinted serum SPF 50 that we've been talking about as one of our hero products. It's getting a little bit of an uplift, if I can breadcrumb that. And we're adding in a couple more products into the range that we think, you know, our client really deserves and really needs. You know, we've never been a trend-focused business. We've never put in things because people are demanding for it. We're really giving them something that they deserve or they need in their skincare ritual. So there'll be a number of those little things coming up as well.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much, Chamonix. You shared such sound advice and nuggets today. We appreciate you so much. Thank you for coming on. Where can everyone follow you, find you, and keep up with Rationale?
So absolutely on Instagram is perfect to be able to find Rationale and me from a personal sort of point of view. On LinkedIn as well, just with my name, Chamonix Rajaratnam. Instagram and LinkedIn are the perfect places for me to interface.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for taking the time to listen to this episode. If there is someone you think this conversation would resonate with, please share it with a friend. Tag us on Instagram at The Big Move Podcast and at mroberts.m. Subscribe, follow, and leave a review and connect with us. We love to hear from you and we want to chat soon.